Chag Elul, as everybody knows, is the birthday of the Baal Shem Tov and the Alter Rebbe. And it was revealed by the previous Rebbe. I've said this before, everybody should know, that the fact that the Baal Shem Tov's birthday is on Chag Elul is a Chabad tradition. It's not mentioned anywhere else.
Nobody
knows the birthday of the Baal Shem Tov, except for Chabad. And the time that it was discovered was 1943 in New York, a fabrication of the Friedrich Rebbe. It's published, and I said that it's tradition in the Rebbe's, the family of the Rebbe's, the Baal Shem Tov was born on Chag Elul. Okay, now there is something special that is happening this year. It's not happening every year. And that is like this. That in the Sicha, the famous Sicha that the previous Rebbe revealed to us, Chag Elul, he called it that this day is the birthday of the two great luminaries. Well, Be'ivrit, Shnei Ameorot HaGdolim. Shnei Ameorot HaGdolim is actually a word, or a term rather. It's a term mentioned in the first chapter of the Torah. On the fourth day of creation, God said, let there be luminaries in the sky. And God said, and God made the two great luminaries. Shnei Ameoros Agdoilim. And what day was it? Yom Revi'i, Wednesday. So he said that this is the birthday of Shnei Ameoros Agdoilim, the two great lights, the Alter Rebbe and the Baal Shem Tov. But the term in the Torah appears when? On Yom Revi. So when Chag Elul, like this year, falls on Yom Revi, says the Rebbe, this term is even more emphasized than any other year. Even though this term is not really relating to the weekday. It could happen even on any other day. There's still going to be the two great luminaries. They're not going to be less luminaries, of course. But we all understand that if it does fall on Yom Revi, the emphasis is greater.
Same with the 115 years ago when Yeshiva Temple in Tzmeimi was founded.
Yeah, the same Yom Rishon.
For today. Oh, you mean it's the same year? Right, the same year. That's right.
Well, Tav Shin Ayin is like amazing year to bring the Gemara.
Tav Shin Ayin? Tav Shin Ayin base.
Ayin
base. The Tav Shin Ayin Gimel. Base. Gimel. We are at base still.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Every day is an amazing day to bring the Gaula. Okay, so now since in this year the Rebbe is talking about, and we are now going to repeat a few ideas of what he said, since that year it synced with Yom Revi, and which on this day the term the two great luminaries appears, so the Rebbe in the Sicha discusses the idea, what is the two great luminaries? What does it mean? He says like this, on one hand, it's two luminaries, it's plural expression, that indicates to us that each one has a special unique position, a special unique role that the other one doesn't have. That's why we need both of them, two great luminaries. On the other hand, it says, Vayas Elokim et shnei ameorot hagdolim, and God made the two great luminaries. It's an expression that denotes unity. God made both of them. So we learn over here like this. Then on one hand, each one has a unique role. And on the other hand, they both express the same concept. And we're going to explain this. It means like this. That the fact that they have two separate roles is not because they are separated from each other. Really, they are the same. Really, conceptually, they represent the same idea. But in order to accomplish the same idea that they both represent, which we're going to learn about, you need to have two different things going on. As we see, that they lived in completely different generations. We have a saying, I'll insert here something that the Rebbe only mentions the saying, I'll mention it first, that we have a saying that the Alter Rebbe said, that he is the spiritual grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. what does it mean, spiritual grandson? It means that he was learning from the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov. He didn't learn from the Baal Shem Tov directly, even though, according to the tradition, the Alter Rebbe saw the Baal Shem Tov when he was a little kid. You may have read the story, right? They took him for the optionish, but he didn't know who it was. It was a whole mysterious relationship that he only later in life found out that this man was the Baal Shem Tov, and Hashem set it up in such a way that he didn't learn directly from the Baal Shem Tov, even though he saw him as a kid. He learned from the Talmidim, from the Magid, from the students of the Baal Shem Tov. So he learned, so that's why we say, he didn't say it was like his son, he said it was like a spiritual grandson. Now this statement, when you hear it, just like that, okay, it's a beautiful, nice statement. The Rebbe doesn't go into a long explanation of what that means, but I would like to insert something here, that you have to know that the Alter Rebbe really believed very strongly, and so do we believe, and so do all the Chabad rabbis believe, and this is the Chabad position, that the true continuation of the Baal Shem Tov, what do you mean the true? The most accurate, the most authentic continuation of the Baal Shem Tov is the Alter Rebbe and Chabad. Okay? But everybody knows probably that this is not something that everybody agrees with. And many of the Hasidim, other Hasidim, of course, they think that they're rabbis.
We're the best.
What?
We're the best.
Yeah, listen, everybody has their shita, right? And, listen, we give a lot of respect to everybody. We see also by the Rebbe that even at years, that the Rebbe didn't take any personal meetings anymore, but he did have personal meetings with Hasidic rabbis. We see it also in Dallas, we see in the Rebbe's philosophy that he gave special role to any Hasidic group whatsoever. Yes.
But you said the Baal Shem Tov to the Alter Rebbe. So what about the Magi?
So this is what I'm explaining. That
the Alter Rebbe is more similar to the Baal Shem Tov in a sense than the Magi.
The Alter Rebbe after the Baal Shem Tov was the Magi. Okay, after the Baal Shem Tov, there is no direct Chabad Rebbe. After the Magid, everybody agrees. There's no dispute among anybody that the Magid is the next Rebbe after Baal Shem Tov. Everybody agrees to that. And then what happens in the third generation? There's 60 different rabbis. Okay, so then the question is, who is more authentic? Okay, so that's not our topic. I'm just mentioning in passing that it's a very strong belief of Chabad. Of the Rebbe speaks about many places that Chabad is the Derech of the Baal Shem Tov. Now, why am I saying it here? Because the fact that the Alter Rebbe said, I am the spiritual grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, there was another, how should we say, there's another issue going on here. And I'm just mentioning it to you in passing. You could read the history of Chabad in other places. The issue is like this. The Baal Shem Tov did have a grandson, famous grandson, and his name was Rabbi Boruch of Mezhibuzh. And Rabbi Boruch of Mezhibuzh, unfortunately, had a little issue with the Alter Rebbe after the Tanya was printed. He argued with the Alter Rebbe, and there was a situation going on. The Alter Rebbe actually wrote a letter. The Alter Rebbe went to meet with him because he wanted to calm everything down.
He wants and to push away from the congregation.
From the what?
Israel. He wants to make a
chirim. I don't know if he wanted to do a chirim. I don't remember if it went that far, but it was not so at some point there was a problem with the
Tzaddik. Someone wants in the life of the Alter Rebbe
make a chirim. Okay, but I don't know if it was the Baruch.
Spiritually, from the source.
Okay, I said I don't remember. But I'm saying that the Rebbe went to meet with him. By the way, this is just a little footnote. On the way to meet with him, the Rebbe met with Rabbi Nachman of Breslev. So the good connection. Anyway, Bekitzer, it wasn't such a great meeting, and the Rebbe wrote a letter about it. And basically, the letter, the Rebbe writes that he doesn't need anybody to approve of what he's doing. He's a Talmid of the Magid, and he feels that he's doing the right thing. Okay? So I'm just saying, when the Alter Rebbe says, I am the spiritual grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, he also means to say, fine, the Baal Shem Tov had physical grandchildren. It's beautiful. They're all tzaddikim, right? We're very careful, even when we talk about such topics, we always speak respectfully about other tzaddikim, even if they had a debate with Alter Rebbe. These are big tzaddikim. But spiritual grandson was the Alter Rebbe. Okay. So therefore, why we say all of this? To make the point that the Baal Shem Tov and the Alter Rebbe is the same thing. Because if he's his grandson, right, they represent the same concept, except there's different manifestations to it, as we will now discuss. Yes.
Well, Chassidus came out of this, Rav Baruch?
Yeah, sure.
What is it?
I don't know exactly which... what, you mean which Hasidic dynasty?
No, I mean, we know, so Rabbi Nachman, we know what came
right,
out.
Right. I don't know.
But something did... He did have followers?
Yeah, no, he's a sefer that people learn. Yeah, he's a big rabbi. Yeah, it's a whole story. It's a big story what happened over there. It's not a simple thing. Okay. But that's not where we're going right now. Right now we're going to go like this. What is the Baal Shem Tov? Just a quick 1 second review. They are the same thing, different manifestations. So now the Rebbe will define what is the mission statement of the... What is the Baal Shem Tov? Baal Shem Tov is one thing. Yafutsu menasecho chutsa. The wellsprings should be spread to the outmost, furthest corner. This is the famous story. This is, by the way, a continuation of the Arizal. Right, the Arizal said it's a mitzvah to reveal the wisdom of Kabbalah, and that same idea comes later to the Baal Shem Tov, the famous story. The Baal Shem Tov goes to the chamber of Mashiach, and he asks Mashiach, when are you going to come? And Mashiach tells him, Mashiach futzum and yasecho futzum, when your wellsprings will spread all around the world. That's actually a pasuk. It's a pasuk in
Mishlei.
Thank you very much. But this became like the manifesto, right? This is it. Now, there is a sicha of the Rebbe Rashab. The Rebbe Rashab has a sicha. There is a sefer called Toiras Shalom. It's the sichas of the Rebbe Rashab. And for some reason, this sefer has not been yet translated. It's in Yiddish. It hasn't been translated into Hebrew or into English. Somebody is working on translating into Hebrew for like 20 years. Because it's not a simple, it's not written in a very... anyway, over there there is a famous sicha that the Rebbe speaks about many times. The Rebbe says like this, in that sicha, the Rebbe Rashab says like this, that there were two tkufot, there were two eras in the Alter Rebbe's life. You look at the Alter Rebbe's life, you can clearly put a line. What is the line? When he comes out of jail. He was in jail a few times, but when he comes out for the big jail, Yutis Kislev, right? What we call Peterburg. Peterburg is the Jewish name, it's not the real name, but that's how the Jews called this city that was then the capital of Russia. This is where the Tsar was. It has a little bit of a Goyish name, but the Jews call it Peterburg. You know, the Jews always they change the name of the cities, make it a little Jewish. Okay, so Peterburg, there is before Peterburg and after Peterburg. First of all, you could look, if you want to be a professor of Hasidus, and now everything is published almost, you could see the stuff the Alter Rebbe said before and after. You could see, first of all, the volume. There's a lot more volume afterwards, you know. And also the quality, you see that the way the Torahs of the Alter Rebbe before Peterburg, they are not so similar to what we call today Chabad Hasidus. They are more similar to the Baal Shem Tov Hasidus. They are very short, and they are very emotionally full of excitement. And he says one point, and he tells you, you know, this is the love of Hashem. It is more like what we call Polish Hasidus. It's very deep, it's very short. The idea is basically to give you like, you know how, what do you call it when a person, God forbid, is almost losing their heart, and they get...
Resuscitated.
It's like supposed to give you like a bomba, you know? It's like you read it, you're like, oh, okay, you know? And Chabad, Maimorim, afterwards, it's all discourse, slow, you know, it's a form for meditation, right?
Is that like when he was writing about like Kitubim and like has like those books and like Ketuvim and like Tehillim, the commentaries on them.
Right, right, right. These Maimorim, that's right, very good. The Maimorim of the Alter Rebbe, that's why I said today everything is published. So there's different books, you can see the short Maimorim. One of them is on Ketuvim, you're right. There's also a Sefer, Ma'amarei Admor HaZaken, HaKtzarim, the short Maimorim. Okay, so after Peterburg, so the Rebbe Rashab says, the whole idea of Yafutzu Ma'inasecha Chutza, that which the Baal, with the Mashiach says to Baal Shem Tov, you know where it begins? After Peterburg. After that, the Rebbe goes out of jail. This is where it begins. So again, the Rebbe says, so what do we learn from it? We learn from it that the Baal Shem Tov and the Rebbe, really, it's the same thing. Ma'inotecha. It's the wellspring of Hasidus. It's the same concept. But there's different levels. Of course, during the time of the Baal Shem Tov, it began. I'm not saying it didn't begin. Of course it began during the time of the Baal Shem Tov. But it didn't really go so far. And even what Alter Rebbe himself did, before Peterburg, it didn't really go that far. Really, it started after Peterburg. We're going to now get, since we have an honorary guests that came in order of the special day of Tesvav Elul, right? So we're going to talk about that in a minute. I just want to say one comment here that the Rebbe says before that, that is very, very important, very profound comment that everybody should know. This is from the Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach Tzedek explains something beautiful. That usually when we say, what does it mean the wellspring should go out? So it means to take the ideas of Hasidus, and not only should they stay in the Chabad synagogue or yeshiva, they should go out to the street, to the world. Okay. But the Tzemach Tzedek says, you know, that Yifutzu Manaser HaChutza, first of all, it begins within the person himself. That the wellspring should break through within ourselves. In other words, sometimes a person could be very involved in the Mayan. I take the Sefer in the morning and I learn Hasidus, and you know what? It's so beautiful, it's so amazing, but you know what? It stays right here in my head and my heart and my emotions and my action. Unfortunately, as we all know it, sometimes could be no connection, you know? It's like unplugged, you know? No reception. So the Tzemach Tzedek says, first and foremost, the Yafutzu is within myself. That whatever I'm learning in Chassidus should spread into my whole being. It shouldn't stay just in my mind. And then, once I'm on a level that it's actually affecting me, then I can take it out there. Okay, so we have the Alter Rebbe. I'm sorry, the Baal Shem Tov, the Alter Rebbe. Then says the Rebbe, then we see this is connecting to Yeshivas Tom Chatmim. Because Yeshivas Tom Chatmimim is like this. The day of the Ityazdut, the day of the establishment of the Yeshiva, is the 15th of the month. This is what we learn when we read. We read the Hayom Yom today, right? Let's read the Hayom Yom again, even though I'm sure you heard it in Shul. Hi, how are you? Welcome. So today, we read the Hayom Yom. And this is what we are reading over here. That the day Yeshiva Tom Chatmimim was established was on the 15th of Elul. 15th of Elul was today. The Yeshiva, the famous Yeshiva, was established today. When did they start learning? On Chai Elul, which is going to be Wednesday, right? In a few days.
Tuesday night,
okay. So, you know, the famous joke they say, I don't know if it's true or not true, but that's the saying. Say, what does it mean that the yeshiva opened? This is what he said. The yeshiva was established on Sunday. They started learning on Wednesday. So what did they do from Sunday till Wednesday? So there's a joke. They say, the kitchen opened on Sunday. The learning started on Wednesday. I don't know if it's true or not. That's how I have this one. What? The mashke they start giving on Sunday. But in any case, we see.
Is that true by this yeshiva as well?
What? Probably all yeshivas. So now, this yeshiva this yeshiva, even though nowadays, thank God, we're sitting here, we're learning, everything is seems to be normal. Normal, I mean, I don't suspect anybody here is normal. I don't mean that. I'm joking. I mean, when I say normal, I mean the setup that we're learning Talmud in the morning and we're learning Chassidus in the morning and in the afternoon. It doesn't seem to be a revolutionary concept. Okay? But everybody should know that when this yeshiva was first established, and how many years we are celebrating now?
115.
Great. So 115 years ago in Ukraine, in the old Russia, Ukraine over there, when it was Ukraine or Russia? It was in Russia probably. Russia, because Lubavitch is in Russia. Okay. In Russia, 115 years ago, when this yeshiva was established, it was a revolutionary concept. Why? Because first of all, a yeshiva, in and of itself, was relatively modern idea. Before that, people were just sitting in a synagogue learning. That's what it was. It was a shul. You know the word shul? What does the word shul mean, you know? Shul is a German word. Shul means school. That's what shul means. Because the school used to be in the shul. That's how it was. The shul really is where the kids were learning, where everybody was learning.
Shul is the synagogue.
Right. Shul today, we call it synagogue. Yeah. Okay, so before this yeshiva was opened, what the Jewish world had was like this, that instead of people sitting in a synagogue learning, everybody learning whatever they want, they made it more organized. It's going to be classes, there's going to be teachers, and also there's going to be topics of study. You're going to learn right now tractate Sabbath. You're going to start in October, in Elul, and you're going to finish right at the end of the year, you're going to learn all. So they started organizing it. It became more like an academy, a yeshiva academy. And in those yeshivas, at the time, they were only learning Talmud and Code of Jewish Law. Now, if somebody was learning Jewish mysticism, they were learning it on their own. They were sitting with a friend. There was no official academy where there were lectures and classes on Jewish mysticism like it was in Talmud. There was no such a thing. And this was the revolution of Yeshiva Stam Chedrin. This was the idea. The Rebbe Rashab said, and you could read later the exact sources, he says, I want people to learn Hasidus as much in the same organized fashion that they learn Talmud. Now, this is I want to just a little bit emphasize this point. This point is more profound than it seems, because it's not only a technical issue that we're saying, okay, until now, if you want to learn mysticism, you have to sit with your friend. Now, you can go to the academy, you can enroll. No, it's deeper than that. It is, how do you view Jewish mysticism? Up till that point, Jewish mysticism, by and large, was not defined as an intellectual pursuit. It is a mystical pursuit. Meaning to say, let's say you read the Zohar, or you read the Kabbalah, or whatever it is, whatever text you read. If it makes no sense to you in your rational mind, then you say, okay, it doesn't have to. It's not a rational topic. It's mysticism. Mm-hmm. Since man, mysticism has to make sense. In Chabad, Chassidus, we try to combine both, which is a very difficult undertaking. On one hand, we are obviously acknowledging that it's mysticism, and the logic of it, and the intellect of it, is of a different nature than the Talmud. At the same time, we are doing the utmost that it should make sense to us within our logical tool. Now, what's the idea? The idea is that the opening of this yeshiva academy is, we talked before, of the idea of spreading the wellsprings, the secrets of mysticism, what we call the wellsprings of Hasidism, spreading them all around the world. Before this academy was established, before this yeshiva was established, it was not as easy to do, because people were not trained how to learn those ideas in a way that it could be explained to everybody. But once there was a yeshiva, and the yeshiva was established by the Rabbi Rashab, the fifth Rebbe, and then by the previous Rebbe. So now we took the ideas of the Baal Shem Tov to a much greater scale in many different places. And all, when we look at the previous Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, within his life there were also, even though there were more than two periods, but there were, we put a line between two general periods. One period is when he was in the Soviet Union, what we call behind the Iron Curtain, and the second period is when he comes to the United States. When he comes to the United States, the previous Rebbe, then there begins a whole new era of spreading the ideas of Hasidism. And he does also something that you have to know. This is something that, you know, sometimes it's hard to regain historical perspective, but I'm going to help you with it right now. You should know that nowadays when a person wants to read anything about Jewish mysticism in English, no problem, everything is available, right? If you live in the United States, you go on Amazon.com, if you want to spend the money, overnight FedEx, you can have the whole Zohar. You could do it. It costs a lot of money, but it could be done. I know people, Big Mo can tell us from your experience, but you know, I wasn't in the United States in the 60s and the 70s, but people told me, they remember, they walk into a Jewish bookstore and there was a Siddur and there was a Torah in English. That's it. Anything else you wanted to learn, if you didn't know Hebrew, there was no, you had to go to somebody and ask them. You couldn't get any books, okay? Then slowly people started publishing. But even when they were publishing, they weren't publishing mysticism. They weren't publishing Hasidism. The previous Rebbe comes to America. Okay, that's before the 60s. That's 1940. And he makes it into a big... value to publish the ideas of Jewish mysticism in English.
Priority.
What? Priority. Thank you. That's the one. Makes it into a priority to publish Hasidic ideas in English. Now, here also, I would like to elucidate this point, because there's something here that is important to look at in case you don't think about it if I don't mention it. The whole idea of Jewish mysticism traditionally is not an equal opportunity pursuit. Okay? Because basically you ask, and even today certain rabbis in Israel, you ask them and they tell you, learning Hasidus and Kabbalah, it's not for everybody. First you have to keep all the Torah and all the mitzvahs, and you have to learn all the Bible and all the Talmud, and there's a whole list of conditions that some people believe a person has to have before they are able to open the books, the Jewish mystical writings. When the previous Rebbe says, let's now translate it into English, knowing that this is now going to be in every bookstore in America, or potentially it could be, he's also making another statement within it, saying, I believe that everybody that can read English is eligible to learn this stuff. So in other words, he's making it equal opportunity pursuit. This is for everybody. And this is a major revolution, because Chabad believes very strongly that everybody should have access, equal access to the secrets of the Torah. This is a revolution, because it comes with a much more positive look at every Jew and at every person. It's basically saying, everybody deserves to learn it. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have to strive. Of course, we should do more mitzvot, and we should prepare ourselves, and we should try to be on the level that these teachings relate to us. Of course, it doesn't mean that now we don't have to do anything. But it does mean that we open it up for everybody. So, therefore, bottom line, because everybody has to come to a bottom line, is that we, each and every one of us, in this day, today is the day of the opening of the yeshiva, and we learned before, on Wednesday it's going to be Chayel, the birth of the Baal Shem Tov and the Alter Rebbe, it's an awesome day. So we all have to take good resolutions about spreading the wellsprings even further, as we said before, within ourselves, further within ourselves, and further in the world. This time, By the way, Tafshin Mem Hei, it's 1985. In the middle of this year, there was a big campaign that the Rebbe was speaking about, and he's mentioning it in this sikh over here. Sorry. And the campaign is basically, I'm just going to try to turn this thing off. The campaign, you know, if some of you know, in 1984, the Rebbe started each campaign. Campaign was to print the Tanya in every city in the world. You know, you ever look, do you have Tanya on the table over here? You know, the Tanya is the most printed, you don't have to bring it, but you could look later in the back. You know that the Tanya, which is, you know, the Sefer of the Alter Rebbe, is the central work of Chabad Hasidism. Do you know the Tanya? Yeah, that's what it's called. We have it here. We're learning it every day. Do you know that this book is the most printed, meaning not, well, it's tricky how to say it, not the most copies have been printed, but printed in most locations around the world.
It's not size what, like the New Testament?
No, I'm talking Jewish books. I don't know.
The Testament is pretty good, yeah.
But,
I heard something about the most printed book.
No, that's what I said, not copies. I'm not talking about copies, I'm talking about most editions. It's the same book, but in different locations. In different locations around the world.
Like not being shipped there, but actually being printed up there?
Printed in a different place. It's really? Been printed all around the world. Now, this was a big campaign. First of all, you should know, before the Rebbe, let's say 100 years ago or 50 years ago in the back, the Tanya is hands down the most printed Hasidic book, for sure. With most editions, most print, because it was a very popular book, and also because Chabad, the idea of publicizing the wellsprings everywhere, this is not something that started with the Rebbe, this is what we just read. It started with the Alter Rebbe, and then the second Rebbe, and the third Rebbe. So Chabad was always into massive publication of books, more than any other Hasidic group. That's in the history. In our time, in 1984, the Rebbe made a campaign that the Tanya should be printed in every city in the world. Now, I remember it. I was a kid then, and depending on who you were, you know, I was a little kid, but some Chabad rabbis that were more able and more dedicated to the Rebbe started to go crazy about this because the Rebbe wanted it. I remember there was one guy, Halperin from Brazil. This guy went all over Brazil, okay, and in just different towns. And I guess he went to towns where there are Jews, and he shows up in 770 one day with 100, it was like a bookcase like this, with 100 Tanyas, each one from a different city. So in each place they would print 100 copies, 200 copies. They didn't print, you know, 10,000 copies. There was some sort of a... They created this system where they would put the machine. You know, it was like a photocopy, high-level photocopy machine with a binder. They would put it like on a van. It was like a whole thing, a little mitzvah tag. And they would drive to a town. You know, sometimes they would call, you know, if they could call the mayor, they could call some official, they could call somebody from the city, you know, to help them roll the machine, so it'd be more symbolic. They would be there 5 hours, they roll the machine, they're binding the book, we're printing 200 books in this town, then they were looking for Jews to give them to them. So this guy shows up by the Rebbe, standing by the Rebbe's office, 100 books. Then this was, there was also, at the time, No, Hebrew. They printed the original thing. At the time, also, in 1982, in the summer of 1982, started what we call the First Lebanon War. Okay? So, basically what happened then, whatever the story was, what happened before, but Israel went into Lebanon, like 40 kilometers in, it took a long time. Anyway, so, Chabadnikim, what do? You know, they go in there with the van just to print the Tanya. You know, so trying to be spiritual, cool dudes, you know. We don't get involved in the warfare.
Zone.
What? It was a war zone. Yeah, it was crazy because the soldiers, they weren't like, you know, the last thing they needed is civilians, you know, in the middle of a war, you know. But these guys show up, you know, and I have some friends who did it. And they had some sort of a approval from the army to do. I mean, they didn't go completely crazy. If somebody called somebody and they said, it's right, from Tzfat they did it, right? Because it was the north, you know?
Yeah.
And I heard heard from soldiers that some guy told me he was stationed somewhere like in Beirut, whatever, in the middle of a war. All of a sudden, he's like, Chabad, dang. He's like, what are you guys doing? Get out of here. Well, what are you doing? I didn't even get here, you know? I said, listen, we've got to print the Tanya and we're getting out of here. So they did it in many, many different places. And you know that in 1984, it happened actually twice, but in 1984, at that time, there were already 2,000 different editions of the Tanya. So the Rebbe, in his birthday, Yudalf Nissen, the Rebbe's birthday, so he made a special surprise gift, so you could see it in the movies. Nobody knew about it except for a few people, and the Rebbe asked the people working with him to print a special Tanya, that in the back there is going to be a copy of the first page of all the other ones. So all the editions, you flip through it, and you see just the name, you know, the city, Italy, France, Germany, United States, Israel, whatever. So the Tanya was like this. I have a copy at home of one of them, so it was like this. And then it was prepared in a room, nobody knew about it. And then at the Fabrinian, the Rebbe said, now there's going to be a surprise. I'm going to hand as a gift to each person that's here a special edition of the Tanya that we printed, and everybody should. So,
it was
what?
It was unbelievable.
You were there?
Yeah, yeah. People were in shock. People couldn't move when the Rebbe said that. It's like, wow, Tanya. And then once the line started afterwards, you know, to distribute it, it's not a light book, and the Rebbe had to pick up.
Right.
Each one to give it to people. It took time, and you know, and the secretaries are trying to move you, and you, but the Rebbe was like giving, and he smiled. What a smile! He gave every person like the special smile, special koch to learn Tanya.
Right.
Mom, she gave you the koch to learn it. It's like this is yours. It's like that's what he felt. He felt like he's giving you his chelik in Hasidic, his portion of Hasidic philosophy. Now is handed over to you. I mean, that was outrageous. People were going, people were dancing in the streets with the Tanya. People were dancing. People made a kafas with the Tanya. You can't imagine what was going on. It was unbelievable.
You did this in Sfat?
No, this is in New York.
Brooklyn, 770 Eastern Parkway.
New York.
Okay.
New York. Yeah. So that time that he's talking about, the Rebbe, when the Rebbe would talk, would start at 9:30. Okay. So 9:30 he started talking for Bregen, and he would end, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. Usually, he would, by that time, would go home. That night, he would start handing out the books, but as we just heard, you know, it took a while. So the Rebbe ended like 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. You could see, they put a video of it.
People heard about it, like from New Jersey and other places. People came.
So they start coming.
People came in. No, people, are you kidding me? They heard that. The Rebbe's getting, people came in from like 2 or 3 hour drives, you know, to get this.
This is in 84?
This is 1984, yeah.
84.
Yeah. 84. Now, the Rebbe gave Tanya's in other times. I got a Tanya from the Rebbe in 1990. Yuchvat Shnas Arboim, the Rebbe gave Tanya. I have it. But that's a regular. I mean, every Tanya is holy, you know?
It's not regular. You got it from the Rebbe.
Right, no. That's Tanya. Right, of course. No, but I mean, that story that we
edition.
Right, that story we're talking about is the 2000 cover edition, and later it reached 3000. It reached 3000. Now, why am I telling you this story in so many details here? Because the Rebbe attributed to this a huge significance. This is not, you know, people actually wrote the Rebbe letters about this. Ask them like, what's it all about? You know, printing the Tanya everywhere in the world, and printing the shah. How do you call the front page? You know, the gate. No, but how do you call the cover page? The cover, right? The 3,000 cover. Ask them a question like, what's it all about? Like, what do you? I mean, it's a very unusual idea, right? So but the Rebbe treated this as a very big step. In making the teachings of Chassidus available. Because let's say right now the Tanya was printed in, I don't know, in some city in France, okay? That has five Jews and nobody is connected to Judaism for some reason. But we believe very strongly that when you take a very holy book that contains some really mystical spiritual ideas and you print that book in that town, even though, you know, they would sit for like 10 minutes, half an hour, they would learn something in it. So basically, you made those ideas more available to that location in the world, somehow, because it was printed there, you know?
Versus it was, printing it in America and shipping it out.
Right.
The fact that it was printed in that city.
It was printed there. By the way, you know that Tzfat, as long as we talk about printing, you know that the first print house in Israel was in Tzfat. You know about that? The whole print is invented in 1450, right? Gutenberg Bible is published when?
What's in front of the
1455, right?
In front of the Semach.
What?
The building was in front of Semach.
Right. The building is right there.
I heard something.
That there was a Jewish print building in Tzfat. It's very, very important. They published very important works, you know. And so we know, when we look at the history of the world, we know that cities where there was a print house at the time, they were very influential. Think about it, you know, places where they printed books.
When did they do that in Tzfat?
Tzfat, it was in the 16th century, I think like 1550.
It's a museum for that also.
Museum of the Hebrew book or something.
Printing, that's an amazing period of printing.
Right, the first 100 years. Yeah. The first 100 years. It's very right. You're right. It's an amazing period, and it's very important. But here we're talking not so much influencing the world literally by printing it and selling it to people. It was more a mystical thing. The Rebbe wanted the whole world to have printed Tanis, and it was accomplished. You know, so that is to show what is the point. The point is, to conclude this idea, the point is that we all have, I just gave this as an example of how in our time the Rebbe pushed us to publicize the ideas of Hasidism to a very far away corner. But to bring it down to us, the idea is like this. The ideas of Jewish mysticism many times are very sublime, very advanced, and we have to bring them down. We have to make sense of them. We have to make it ours. Not only that somebody tells me, you know, it says in Kabbalah 1, 2, 3. Okay, that's beautiful, but I have to unite with it in such a way that it's like my idea. You know, I internalize it so much that I actually think it on my own. There is a saying, I don't know where this saying is from, but I like it. There's a saying like this, that what's the difference between Kabbalah and Hasidism? They say, Kabbalah takes a person to Shamayim. It takes a person to heaven. Right? It takes you up. Hasidism brings the heaven down to us. And it's a very profound thing, because I could learn something mystical, and it could take me, I'm basically going to the airport, and I take the flight, and I'm flying up, and it's beautiful. But then there is the idea of, you know, bringing it, that it makes sense. It's not just a mystical concept, but in addition to it, it also is a rational concept. It makes sense in my personal life.
Why does one bring heaven to the airport?
To Earth.
Oh. You're saying the analogy, like you go up on a plane and you go on a ship.
Not just the public service announcement. Now until Chayelo, the first Hebrew English Tanya was printed in Israel. Is that a cent? Everybody can get it. I'll give it to everybody half price if you say you come from the yeshiva. Get it half price. 2002, Chai Elul, we printed the first Hebrew English Tanya in Israel.
Oh, really?
Cent, yeah.
Really? Oh, the one with the symbol of cent?
Yeah, it was 10 years ago.
Mom, before the first Hebrew English
Tanya? No, before that they brought it from New York.
They never printed, before they printed in England and America and Australia and all these places, wow. But they never printed in Eretz Israel. And English Tanya. It was a big thing till the guy in Chovot got the things, the plates put together, and then afterwards, Kvar Chabad, they printed it, you know, Rabbi, you know, Gaffer. but we printed it 10
Oh, this is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you're saying because in the next 3 days you'll give us a discount because it's the anniversary?
Because it's 10 years since we printed it.
So wait, printed it on Chayelu?
On Chayelu, definitely.
I'm going to get my first time.
Wow.
Chayelu, so, 10 years ago.
So here's what I want to add to that.
I was dreaming about this for so many years, and I finally put it together.
How long was this book to translation?
How long what?
What's that? It's the same as in all the Tanya's.
Say again?
How long has this book been printed?
Oh, is this the spirit?
What?
200 years.
What book is the lessons in Tanya?
Right.
This
also translated it.
No, this is, the translation is Dr. Nissen Mangel. That's all the Tanya's.
Now you know, as long as you mention it, you know that when the Tanya was first printed in English, I think it's 1977, or 7, somewhere there, we could look. Right, 77. The Rebbe also made a big thing about it. It was a special session that the Rebbe said in front of the library. It was right before Pesach or something. And the special session the Rebbe said, and he gave out some Tanya's. It was also a very big deal when the Tanya was first printed in English. So I'll conclude the class by saying to you the following. That since we got on this topic, I'll add one more thing to it. And that is like this. I've happened to be a shliach in Oregon for quite a few years, and I noticed, being a Chabad rabbi in the university campus, I noticed that once in a while, students that would get really into learning Torah, once in a while they would tell me, and either they would tell me or they would pick up, that some of them may be a little bit upset that they didn't learn this stuff earlier in life. They're like, you know, it's going to take me like 2 years to learn Hebrew, and it takes me 5 years to learn the Torah, and another 10 years to learn the Talmud, and it's like, well, they would have this conversation. It's like, listen, you know, it's like, it's not fair, you know, like, why wasn't I going to Cheder, you know? Anyway, so one thing that I used to say to students, and I'm going to say it to you as well, and it's not my own idea, I heard it from the Rebbe, and it's a simple thing once you hear it. The idea is like this. We just learned in this talk by the Rebbe that our job is to bring the water springs to the most far away place. That's our job. And some of us have been, all of us, we all have been born and grown up wherever we were, but some of us have such an important job to bring it so far away that for that, if we would have been born in Yerushalayim learning Hebrew all our life, we wouldn't have the tools to speak to a Jew from California, or to speak to a Jew from France, or wherever it is that we're from. Because we wouldn't be able to have the language about this. What?
To relate.
Right, we wouldn't be able to relate to such a person. So we have people who are great tzaddikim and holy people, and they're sitting in yeshiva all day. Okay, fine. That's the journey that Hashem gave them, is to be like that. But for those of us that see, they look in their own background, their own life journey, and they see that they grew up in a different culture, now learning this, it's never a reason to be depressed, God forbid. It's the other way around. It's you see that Hashem is giving you such a special job that you have to give those teachings so far away that those are the tools you are getting. Everybody gets the tools of what they need to do. So therefore, all of us, we all have our job in our own network of acquaintances, of friends. You know, it's a big job. It's not even a job. It's an art. How to explain the ideas of Hasidus first and foremost to ourselves. And then, in the right time, in the right place, with the right... You know, I always dive into Hashem, that Hashem should give me the right words to explain ideas, because sometimes you try to explain something to somebody, and they get uptight, you know, they get too upset. You're just trying to be nice and say something, and they're already thinking who knows what. So Hashem should bless all of us in this week. This is a special week, Chayelu. We should all get the blessing and the empowerment to be able to understand Hasidus and to be able to teach it properly to other people.
Amen.
Shkoyach. Okay, so Chazara, right? And then Maariv. Then Fabringen. Shkoyach.